In this podcast, Mark Harrigan and Michael Dore present an introductory workshop about asexuality. Apologies that the start of the workshop is missing from the recording.
I said, I don't have a religion. And this answer just did not make any sense to him at all. Now, the thing I find fascinating is not so much that he didn't know very many non-religious people, or that, you know, that was uncommon or it was a bit unusual. It was more that the actual idea of not having a religion just didn't make any sense to this person. You know, it's just if you're not Christian, then you must be Hindu. If you're not Hindu, then you must be Muslim. Blah, 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 blah. It's more like there's sort of a logical paradox in not having a religion. Now, of course, we're not talking about religion here, and we're in a culture where it's actually quite normal now to be, it's actually quite acceptable to be non-religious. But in some sense, I think the same principle applies. If you'd asked me at, say, 15, I would have been able to tell you that I was asexual. In fact, I didn't tell people I was asexual. I never experienced sexual attraction. I even used the word asexual. This is long before, like, the asexual movement even existed. It was just who I was. So why is there a problem? The problem, of course, is that we're all facing an uphill battle against popular culture. Now, this is something I'm sure many of you can relate to extremely well. That, you know, it's not so much there's actually a problem of being, say, lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender. I mean, of course, all these things have their problems, just like heterosexual people have their own problems. But the real issue is that we're involved with popular culture, which assumes that people are all heterosexual, cisgender. And, I mean, the details are a little different in the case of asexuality. But we still face what Mark calls the sexual assumption, that, you know, everybody wants sex, everybody is sexually attracted to somebody, and this is why there's a problem. And so, on discovering the asexual community, my experience was much like many other asexuals, is, yes, I was right all along. And, of course, that should be obvious, because if you want to know about somebody's feelings, then you listen to them, and the same applies to everybody. But, you know, when we're constantly told that our feelings are invalid, then, you know, people will try to fit into the norm that exists. And we all know that, you know, fitting square pegs into round holes, it just doesn't work. People make themselves miserable that way. In fact, it's quite amusing that some people, on discovering asexuality, it actually allows them to understand the sexual world itself a lot better. I mean, some people, that there are asexuals who just assume that, you know, everybody's like them really and nobody really likes sex, but they just go along with it because they have to. They have to have children. And there are asexual people who have come out of the asexual community and said, right, what the asexual community has taught me is that sexual attraction actually exists, and I didn't know that before. Because, of course, they only have their own experience, and they're told by everybody else that, you know, their experience is typical, and if you don't like sex, then, well, it's just your problem, really. And you should try a bit harder. The other thing that I really like about the asexual community is that, for the most part, it's a sex-positive movement. Now, this was something I would say I was pretty sort of nervous about before actually having anything to do with this. You know, there is actually a temptation, and there are some asexuals, a minority, but some who actually sort of see it this way, and that's to, you know, see asexuality as being a anti-sex, a puritanical thing, you know, because there are parts of culture that will actually not only accept asexuality, but will kind of see it as some sort of virtue, like being chaste. I mean, of course, it's not quite that simple. I mean, in religious culture, there's also the be fruitful and multiply factor. Actually, if you read the book of Genesis, that's the first commandment that God gives to his creation. But on the other hand, you know, I think it's fair to say that we could get a lot more acceptance in the sort of conservative religious culture than most other people in the LGBT community could. And I mean, my own opinion is that this is not the route that we want to go down at all. In fact, I see asexuality as really just another arm of sexual liberation or sex positivity. The crucial thing that we all share is that our sexual desires and how we act on them should be determined by our own feelings, and there's no point in trying to make people fit into into a place they don't belong. Okay, so I think that's all I want to say for now. I think Mark would maybe pick us up from there and talk a bit about his interest.
Yeah, so I'm Mark, I'm doing a PhD in the sociology department. I'm not asexual, but whereas what for me at first was just an intellectual interest has become quite a passionate social and moral one as well. So as well as my academic research, I've tried to do a lot of visibility work and to try and raise awareness of asexuality. Because for reasons I'll come on to in a minute, I think it's very important, and I think the marginalisation of asexuals in contemporary culture is symptomatic of some underlying tendencies which harm everyone to varying degrees, sexual and asexual. And I got interested in asexuality because I happened to meet two asexuals for the first time, and at first I didn't get it. I was intrigued by this notion, so, you know, you never have any interest in sex. It was in the process of asking them about this and questioning them that I started to find it quite fascinating. And at that point, I just finished doing my master's dissertation research project on sexual identity. And all, everything you read in academia about sexual identity presumes that everyone has sexual desire, and tends to presume that sexual desire is pretty much the same thing, regardless of who you're talking about. So meeting these self-defined asexuals and starting to get my head around what they meant when they said they were asexual really opened my eyes to, I think, a lot of academics that do sexuality is just plain wrong, at least to some extent, because of this assumption. And I also got interested in it on the level of, I mean, in terms of the history of sexuality, until there was a widespread recognition that there were people who were gay, no one defined themselves as straight. The words heterosexual and homosexual, if you look in various dictionaries of the histories of words, didn't come into being until the early 20th century. And it wasn't until there was the first sign, the early, very early stages of the gay rights movement, that people started to define themselves as heterosexual in a widespread way, because unless there's an alternative, unless there's a visible alternative, and you can see what people other than yourself are like, how they call themselves, how they see themselves, then why would you define yourself as heterosexual? And similarly, I'm really fascinated, both intellectually and, I guess, politically, with the effect that an increasing visibility for asexuality could have on wider society. Because since I started to study asexuality, I've started to see my own sexuality, as opposed to asexuality, and this gets a bit tricky verbally, in a different light. And I think, as Michael said, I've written about this in my research, the sexual assumption. Not just that people assume that sexual desire is universal, but that it's uniform and that we mean the same thing when we use the term. And I think sex and sexual desire are actually a much more complex phenomenon than people tend to realise. And that even people who aren't asexual themselves are basically pressured into by wider society to placing this overarching emphasis on sex, both when you're growing up as a marker of personal fulfilment, as a sign that you're maturing, but also in wider life, that people aren't allowed to work out the importance it should have for them in their own life. You know, from the time we're teenagers, it's socialised into us that it is important. And as a culture, I think we're very inarticulate about sex. So as well as my concern to try and raise awareness about asexuality, I'm also very keen to try and understand the way in which, as a culture, we talk and think about these things. And so I did my research a couple of years ago, but I'm still writing on the basis of it now. And so I interviewed 8 people face-to-face, but also collected 175 surveys from people all over the world, and spent a lot of time on asexual blogs, forums, websites. And it was really striking when I started, because at that point, very few people had actually done any research on asexuality. So at first, it was literally just a stage of a case of finding people that I'd spoken to and then writing about what they said. But in the last couple of years, there's been a big upsurge in interest, so it's actually becoming an increasingly major area. And there's a lot of interesting work done. For instance, one of my favourite authors writes a lot about asexual relationships, which is something that, for people who aren't asexual, can be quite a difficult thing to grasp. But also, from my research and from her research, even a relationship between two asexual people can be quite difficult, just because the concepts our society has for talking about relationships have this assumption of sexuality and sexual desire built into them. So there's quite a lot of research going on now about asexuality. Some of it's psychological, so just looking at the individual and abstraction. And some of this is a bit dodgy in some ways, you know, strapping people physically into measuring chairs to measure their physical reactions to things, showing them pornography, things like that. There's sociological approaches, which is the sort of school of thought that I'm coming from, which looks at how an identity of asexual emerges from an individual's attempt to make sense of themselves and make sense of the situation they're in. And there's also, which I find really exciting, there's lots of literary approaches. So people are increasingly looking at literature and culture and film and television and trying to do asexual readings of it, looking at how sex and sexual desire are conscripted in popular culture and the messages this sends. And so yeah, I think it's a very exciting area. And as I say, I mean, academically, I think it's a starting point for basically questioning most of what our culture assumes about sex and sexual desire. Because we assume that we have this thing called a sex drive that makes us desire sex. And I think the existence of asexual shows that that's not true for at least some people. But I think even for non-asexuals, it is a very misleading picture. And so academically, I think it's a fascinating field and one that's likely to grow. And hopefully that academic work can help increase the visibility of asexuals. Thank you. Do you want to carry on, Michael?
Yeah, I mean, actually, just to pick up on something Mark said, I mean, one, of course, the asexual visibility movement is extremely important for asexuals, there's no doubt about that, but one of the things that actually interests me is that it actually could have interesting insights that go beyond the asexual community. One example is, well, kind of alluded to, and that's this separation between romantic desire and sexual desire, or sexual attraction. And I mean, this was even a new concept to me. But I'm not saying it was completely invented by the asexual community. I mean, LGBT groups have long had this notion of affectional orientation, which sometimes is different to sexual orientation. But it's more of an issue in the asexual community simply because I'd say a great majority of asexuals have a mismatched sexual and romantic orientation. So just to go through the possible romantic orientations, I mean, they work very much in analogy with sexual orientations. You can have heteroromantic people attracted romantically to the opposite gender, homoromantic, attracted to the same gender, biromantic, aromantic, and panromantic. And actually, most asexuals are not aromantic. Now, of course, there's a minority that is, and it's very important that we include them and we take account of their needs and desires. But I mean, even the fact of having to say that is kind of underlines the point that most asexuals actually do have a romantic orientation. And this is something that it's very unfamiliar to a lot of people from outside the asexual community. I mean, some people will even tell you that romantic relationships are defined by sex. And so to want a romantic relationship is the same thing as wanting to have sex. Now, I mean, of course, a bit of thought shows that this is obviously nonsense. I mean, sex might be one part of a relationship, but there are many other parts. And in fact, even having sex doesn't mean that you're in a relationship. It's perfectly possible to have sex with people regularly and not be in a relationship. And I think this insight that these two things are different actually extends well beyond the asexual community. So I'm on a forum called Asexual Visibility and Education Network, AVEN, the largest online community. And it's not uncommon to actually get people coming in who are not asexual at all. I mean, everybody's welcome there. But they still find the asexual community is the best place they fit into simply because they might be homosexual and heteroromantic or vice versa. And this sort of the consequences of having this mismatch between romantic and sexual orientation is better worked out in the asexual community than, well, anywhere else that I know of. So I'll just talk a bit about how relationships work with asexual people. So a common question is, do asexuals only have relationships with other asexuals? And the answer to that is no. I mean, most asexuals would say that in an ideal world, they would have a relationship with another asexual, and some asexuals find another asexual they get on great with, and that's absolutely brilliant. Of course, the problem is that asexuals are 1% of the population, and it's kind of hard anyway to find a person who's that compatible with you. And if you are only restricting yourself to 1% of the population, then it's that much harder. So, as it happens, many asexuals do end up in relationships with other sexual people, with sexual people, and this often actually works brilliantly. I don't want to give the impression that this is always a problem. Some asexual sexual couples are extremely happy, and I think what characterises the relationships where this works is a high degree of acceptance and communication on both sides. And, I mean, of course, this is universal to all successful relationships. And I think what this does is it just highlights that sort of asexual liberation, or if you like, asexual at least visibility and education, is actually vital to everybody. It's not just for asexuals. The reason I say that is because, of course, you know, it's important for asexual people to tell their sexual partners how they feel about these things, and then as a couple, they can work out how they can come to a compromise, or alternatively, maybe the relationship can't work at all, and it's better to know that earlier than later. Unfortunately, at the moment, there are many asexual people just will not come out because they're in a culture which basically tells them that they don't exist. There's, if you like, a contradiction. I've seen sex columnists tell asexuals, yes, you have to be absolutely open with your partner. You must be completely open that you're asexual so that they know where they stand. And that's extremely reasonable. I agree with that totally. But the problem is that a lot of the same people also, when they come across asexuals, they constantly question them. They say, well, are you sure something's not just wrong? Are you sure that you just haven't tried it? Are you sure blah, 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 blah? And, you know, they don't really see that there's a contradiction between these two things. That, you know, if you constantly question somebody's identity, if you constantly tell somebody that they actually must be the same as everybody else, but they just don't know it, then, well, how on earth are they supposed to, like, be this sort of wonderfully open, understanding person who is completely in tune with their own sexuality? It just doesn't work. So I just wanted to sort of end with the point that I actually think that asexual visibility is vital, but it's vital not just for the asexual community, but it's vital for everybody, so that we're all open about, you know, who we are and how we relate to others. Okay. Now, the actual, in some ways, what we're looking forward to most about this, we're 25 past. It's maybe a bit earlier than we were expecting, but I think we could go on to question and answers, because we're hoping that people will have a lot of things to say, unless you want to add anything first.
No, let's do questions.
Yeah. Because we did a similar workshop last term, and one of the things that I thought was most rewarding was we actually had quite a good discussion going at the end. Lots of people had very interesting things to say, or any sort of question at all. We're naive questions are fine, and so that's, I think, what we want to get onto now.
I've got a question. How did you come to define yourself as asexual? Did you find there was a turning point in your life somehow?
I would say that, in some sense, the turning point was actually nothing to do with me, it was to do with everybody else. So, you know, I was going along through life, I was 11, 12, and, you know, like everybody else, I had no interest in sex, but that wasn't unusual because nobody else did either. And then suddenly I was in an all-male school, everybody else suddenly got girls. It was very startling the way that from 1 minute nobody would talk about sex at all to the next minute it seemed like everybody else was sex obsessed, and I just of course didn't have a clue what they were talking about. I mean, of course I sort of knew intellectually what they meant, but you know, they were obviously being things that I just had I couldn't relate to at all. And actually, I'm sure this is actually a similar experience to many people who also are non-heterosexual. I mean, in that regard, I don't think we're different. So, I mean, I would actually identify as asexual because, of course, we've all heard the word asexual from biology, like asexual, non-sexual, and of course we get jokes about that, you know, you're asexual, so does that mean you can split like amoeba? And yeah, okay, I mean, if we could do that, I'm sure that like, there'll be a lot of interest in asexuality. Would we be, like, we'd be in a laboratory under a microscope or something? But yeah, so to me, the actual turning point was other people's change, if you like, and so I started calling myself asexual, and then, if you like, I kind of knew all along I was asexual, but I wouldn't talk about it too much just because it wasn't accepted. And it was the asexual visibility community that actually got me to realise that this is actually a valid thing.
Like you're sort of quite baffled in primary school, probably early secondary school, can't really remember, but around then,
yes.
When everyone suddenly just decided, you know, that their whole life is going to change and they're going to start, you know, trying to pull people in all sorts of directions and all this. But at the time, and I've probably still carried that forward, interpreted it as them sort of being corrupted in some way, and it's not what they're truly believing, it's just what hormones are telling them to believe, if you see what I mean. But I'm not sure whether that's the right approach to take to it, because it's probably a very human thing to do. But it just seems weird that, you know, it doesn't feel like they're actually thinking it, if you know what I mean.
Yeah. Well, I mean, of course, it's a point of self-discovery for everybody at that sort of age, and as you say, people's hormones are raging, and I mean, I don't think there's anything particularly wrong with hormones. I mean, hormones tell you, well, hormones determine who you're attracted to, and, you know, there's nothing wrong with sexual attraction or acting that out. It's one perfectly valid reason for entering into relationships. So, I mean, it didn't bother me so much in that sense. It's more just, you know, I would be quite happy to let people sort of shag as many people as they like, as long as they don't sort of look down on me for not doing the same thing.
I'm not sure it's just hormones, though. Because when there have been tests, I mean, there's no conclusive evidence that asexuality has any relationship to hormonal imbalance or anything like
that's
that.
Very true.
Why would children not have the same... Well,
I find that question fascinating, but at the end of the day, I'm a sociologist, so everyone I spoke to in my research, almost everyone, had this same experience. The age at which it happened was different. Some people it was 12, 13, some people it was when they came to university. But almost everyone had this point at which they realised my peer group are being loud, very vocal about wanting sex, and I don't.
It could be that hormones are like sort of catalyst. I mean, maybe. I mean, I think Mark's point is very important that hormones are not the same. I mean, we all know that there's a stereotype which has long been debunked that, you know, gay men are gay because they have more estrogen, and that seems to be nonsense. But I mean, of course, it could still be true that hormones are what sort of. If people are heterosexual originally, then hormones could be sort of what unleashes that, if you like. I don't know. I mean, Mark will know about the research better than that. And it also touches on a very important point that sex drive and asexuality are not actually the same thing. So you can have high sex drive or low sex drive or medium sex drive and be perfectly asexual. Asexuality is about who you're attracted to, not about libido.
I wonder if, like, the hormones thing. I just kind of, it makes me wonder whether it's kind of a separate thing almost, because I see sex with other people as really different, like a completely different thing to sort of, it's a bit embarrassing, but like masturbation, I find it's a completely separate thing, and I find that people are sort of like, oh, if you haven't got a partner, oh, you need to masturbate loads, and I don't see it as separate. It's a completely different thing for me, like, I'm not asexual, but I did go through a really big stage of thinking that I was. And I think it's just because unless there's somebody that's specifically there that I really, really feel strongly for, I don't have any sexual desire at all for anybody, unless there's somebody specifically there. I'm getting really embarrassed now. Sorry.
And then I
just found that really unusual. Like, when I've spoken to people, a lot of people have not been able to identify with that at all. And sort of, but if there's nobody there that I fancy, then I don't sort of feel it at all, and it's completely a different.
I think
that makes sense.
Yes, it does. I mean, there are some people in the asexual community, or maybe who are still broadly involved anyway, who can identify that very much. In fact, there's even a group of people. I mean, it's not for me to tell you what group you fit into, or of course, but there's a group of people who call themselves demisexual, and they're people who kind of go along with asexuality. They fought for a long time that they were asexual until they suddenly meet a special somebody, and that kind of switches their attraction on, in a sense. And I mean, of course, this is another perfectly valid experience. I don't see it as undermining the asexual experience particularly. I mean, there are some of us who don't experience what's called primary sexual attraction, i.e. we don't particularly have any sexual desires, but if we see, like, a beautiful man or a woman, then we might admire them like a painting or in an aesthetic sense, but we don't see any need to take it further. If there are some people who actually, once they find a special somebody, do experience attraction, then that's great. And actually, on another point you mentioned, though, the first point about there being a very important difference between sex and masturbation, I think this is absolutely critical, especially to understanding sexual relationships. And it's actually something that a lot of asexual people, including myself, didn't really understand. Like, we kind of thought that, well, sex is a physical thing, and, if people don't have sex, and they could get by masturbating properly. And this is another thing that I really learned a lot about just by being in the asexual community, because, of course, many people who come onto like various visibility boards are not actually asexual themselves, but sort of sexual, but in a relationship with an asexual person. And it's really quite striking to me how lonely it can be for them to be in a relationship where they feel they can't actually get what they want through sex act. Sex is actually very much connected with... just shut that window.
Yeah.
For many people, sex is very much associated with emotional closeness. Like, if, it doesn't matter how much the partner says they love them, if they don't get sort of the sex part of the relationship, then they kind of feel rejected, even if they know completely on an intellectual level that their partner loves them and everything. Like, the sex is kind of a missing emotional component of the relationship. And this is something that a lot of asexuals, including myself, have to learn, because to us, sexual attraction and emotional closeness are two totally, utterly different things. And this is the reason why it's very important for both partners to be very open about what they want. And I mean, I'm not putting it all on the sexual person. I mean, of course, an asexual person suffers just as much in a relationship with a mismatched orientation if the two partners are not open with each other.
Yeah, but I don't know. Sort of, I wonder sometimes if the kind of having to have sex to show that you like have somebody needing sex from their partner to show that they love them. I think that's kind of cultural. In a way, because I think it's sort of like almost expected, but maybe that just comes down to what you're saying about being open. If you're open about it, then
of course
it's easier to understand each other.
I can't personally comment, obviously. I mean, my personal inclination or guess or conjecture is that it's more than cultural, because I know people who are very, very accepting of asexuality. They understand asexuality totally, and they think that they will actually tell you completely openly that, they understand that their partner loves them, but it's just not getting this act of intimacy. I think it's like an automatic, it's their body sort of craves it, and it's part of what the emotional connection actually involves in them.
Okay, yeah, no,
but actually, Mark might have more to say about that.
I very much agree.
I mean, of course, I guess it's really an open question. I mean, you could well be right, but at any rate, whether it is cultural or whether it is inbuilt, it's still obviously a very serious problem.
But the relationships can work, though.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And, because I've spoken to quite a number of asexual people who are actually willing to have sex in a relationship and can take pleasure from it, but it's not a sexual pleasure.
Yeah.
It's pleasure from the intimacy and the meaning they know the act has for their partner.
Yeah, that makes sense. I think
it's more than any other kind of relationship, and from everyone I've spoken to, a relationship between an asexual and a non-asexual comes down to negotiation.
That's why openness is always so important.
Yeah, I mean, openness and communication is
what
you need for negotiation.
And as you say, the crucial point is for the two partners to meet somewhere halfway. Now, the actual halfway point might differ between them. Some asexuals are happy to have as much sex as the sexual partner desires. And then there are some asexual sexual relationships in which the sexual person is happy to have no sex. And most actually are somewhere in between those two.
And I've spoken to a few people, for instance, where the asexual partner will let the sexual partner have one night stands with people because they know that they need it, almost like scratching an itch, so to speak.
But I mean, I think that would be... I find that specifically difficult to understand, because I think that if it's sort of about wanting the emotional closeness with your partner, then why would you want to go and have sex elsewhere?
I mean, I can answer that question. I've been in open relationships before.
It's about the
physical need to have sex, and
okay. And
so like that's the reason why I used to be in an open relationship.
Yeah.
Was because I wanted to be able to, and my partner as well, we had that sort of emotional closeness together, but at the same time enjoyed the actual act of having sex with other people. So that's why we were in an open relationship.
I think I just find it hard to understand, but I think that's just me. I don't think it's like, I don't think it's wrong. I just think I find it hard to understand because I've never had that sort of outside of a relationship, if that makes sense. It's always sort of been emotional for me. It's never been, and anything else has just been like kind of almost because that's what you're supposed to do, not because it's actually.
It's worth pointing out, though, that some asexuals have kind of the opposite experience in the sort of polyamorous end of the spectrum, where it's not so much wanting sex with multiple people for obvious reasons, but that if you are asexual, then the conceptual boundary between friend and partner can be very blurred. You know, if you have no interest in sexual desire, how do you distinguish between a romantic attraction and a really close friendship, the kind of friend you want to spend all the time with, that you have a special bond with? And so there's a sort of polyamorous streak within aspects of the asexual community, which is more geared towards having multiple kinds of romantic, almost spiritual engagements with people, which I think is quite an interesting counterpoint to polyamory as sex. There's also polyamory as romance, I think, as well.
But no, that does make sense, thank you.
I've got a question. Do you find the LGBT community are very accepting of asexuality in general?
My personal experience has been extremely good, and this is something that is very controversial within the asexual community. I would say that most asexuals are most asexuals are in favour of an association, but there are a lot of people who say that, you know, we don't have anything in common, and, you know, the stereotype, of course, goes the other way. Now, this is only a stereotype, and I don't believe it myself, but a lot of asexuals some asexuals will tell you that, you know, the LGBT community is actually it's more sex than average. It's sort of oversex. Now, this is not something I personally believe, but I also find that even if this was true, it actually wouldn't bother me too much because, again, as I said before, it's to me, it's not about building society with less sex. It's more about accepting different people's personal personal preferences. So, personally, I've had absolutely no problems with the LGBT community. I'm rather spoiled being in Warwick, being next to Warwick, where we have the LGBT UA Society. But I now work in Birmingham, and I've spoken to people on the campus LGBTQ Q club, and they're also extremely fascinated and accepting about the whole thing. Of course, you do get some idiots, like you get people who just want to make trouble online, for example, and you know, everybody can point to the occasional bad experience. But on the whole, I'd say it's been very positive.
Aspects of the NUS.
The NUS, yes. So at the moment, if I understand correctly, the NUS only allows people who identify as L, G, B or T, so lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, to go along to their conferences. Now, of course, I understand the origin of that, and of course, it's extremely logical that, you know, only people who this is relevant to should be allowed to go and have an influence. The only problem is, of course, is that there are many good reasons, I think, for including asexuality in the sort of broader queer community. And at the moment, since asexual people are not allowed in these conferences, then we can't even argue for our inclusion. Well, that's not completely true. We can, but only if we also identify as one of L, G, B, or T. Which is why it's awesome when people identify as both asexual and something else from the LGBT network. I mean, I'm not one of them. I'm sort of quite boring, if you like. I'm sort of asexual, and that's essentially it. But yes, I mean, we all hope that change is going to come, and the change will come when people who are either allies to asexuality or are actually asexual but also one of the other letters in the alphabet soup, as it's called, can actually go along and argue the case.
In response to that, would you not say that asexuals don't experience homophobia and transphobia in the same way that LGBT people do?
Okay, I'm glad you brought this up. This is a very common criticism. Well, I mean, first of all, of course, there's the point that many asexual people are actually trans or gay.
But then they're covered under the trans
umbrella. That's right. I just wanted to make that point to start off with. And in fact, particularly with the trans thing, it's actually very striking that the percentage of trans people in the asexual community is very, very high. Most people in the asexual community are not trans, but that's about what you could say. I think it's about 30% or something, 30-40%. the second point is that I think that this idea that asexuals sort of do not experience homophobia is actually a bit of an illusion. I can testify to that myself, and it actually comes back to this assumption that everybody has to be sexual in some way. So, you know, I was at school and I would tell people, people would say, which girls do you find hot? And I would say, none of them. And they would say, ah, so you're gay. Because there's this idea that if you're not attracted to one sex, then you must be attracted to the other one. And if it's like sort of the less one, the more the other. Now, of course, we know this is nonsense, and in fact, bisexual people will know that it's complete nonsense because you can be just as attracted to men and women, and the fact you're attracted to one doesn't mean you're less attracted to the other. But unfortunately, many people don't see it this way. So I've certainly experienced homophobia because, you know, you don't like women, so you must be gay. And, you know, I've experienced bullying, even physical assault because of this. So I'd say that, like, it's a bit of an illusion that asexual people kind of get away with it lighter than homosexual people.
I think there is a different kind of prejudice, though. That I think there's a marginalisation a lot of the time within culture versus an outright hostility, at least in terms of people that I've spoken to, which is not for a second saying there isn't outright hostility.
Absolutely.
But that what's really pervasive and pernicious is this marginalisation, this rendering invisible, that I think a lot of problems stem from that.
Absolutely. I mean, if you... Actually, an experience I think many people in the LGBT community can relate to is that often it's actually not so much the bigots who are the worst people, because of course it's never pleasant being discriminated against, and, you know, it's horrible that these people exist. But on the other hand, in some sense they could be ignored because unless they physically assault people, they're just idiots and their opinion doesn't matter. Often the hardest thing for people in the queer community to cope with, from talking to people, is actually people who don't mean them any harm at all, like friends or relatives who just assume that they must be straight. And, you know, they might even say things like, yeah, gay people are perfectly fine with me, but... and then they sort of act as if they don't exist when it comes to actually talking to people they know. They kind of think that people they know can't possibly fall into this category. And so I think that's actually very similar to the asexual experience, that, you know, it's the invisibility, especially from people who actually know you and should know better, that is often the most hurtful thing.
Because if you're trying to come to an asexual identity thinking, are you this way? Then having friends, family, say, maybe you've just not met the right person yet, maybe you're a late bloomer, in terms of people I've spoken to, that's an incredibly dangerous thing, because when people you trust are saying that to you, it becomes really difficult to come to a concrete sense of identity, because it's difficult to say, well, you know, you can't know that you're not just a late bloomer, because some people are.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And so, yeah, people who are otherwise well-meaning can make life really difficult, mm-hmm. I think due to this underlying ignorance of asexuality as a valid orientation.
The LGBT NUS is primarily a campaigning organisation. What would you say were the priorities for campaigning for asexuals?
I would say that the main campaign at the moment is just to actually get awareness out that this thing exists and it's a valid orientation. That in some sense everything else follows from that. I mean, of course, there's not. We don't have quite the same issues in this, and well. You know, we don't have people discriminate against us in the sense that we can't get married. Well, of course, unless we're talking about homoromantic people, in which case they're kind of already covered, as you said. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I'd say the main thing at the moment is that to get the message out that asexuals exist, it's a perfectly valid orientation, it's nothing to be ashamed of, and they're welcome here.
Do you think that's what we as a society should decide that covers asexuality? That's the best thing that we could campaign on. Like, that's the sort of primary issue, as it were.
At the moment, I say yes. Of course, there may be other issues later, but at the moment, I would say our main problem is still, even at this point, just the fact that asexuality is generally not recognised and is not thought to exist.
Do you think it would be possible to ever get it on the sex education syllabus?
I mean,
I think
absolutely.
In one stroke, you'd erase the marginalisation of asexuals, at least in part, by having asexuality be taught during sex ed.
Yeah, absolutely.
Sex ed is quite an issue, though, because, like, lots of sex ed doesn't cover all of heterosexuality or any homosexuality and stuff. So
I think it's quite falls under the sort of campaign.
Yeah, it's like
objectives.
Yeah.
And so in some sense it just underlines the fact that we're kind of all in the same sort of boat together, in a sense. We kind of all want the same things. We want We just want recognition and acceptance.
I have found stuff like, when I've posted the AVEN link on forums and stuff, people have gone, oh no, it's not real, it's not, if you're actually think you're asexual, it's probably just because you need to go and get some treatment, or you know, or you're in a bad relationship and your partner's not making you feel loved enough to want that or anything. And I just think there should be a recognition and say, well, actually, it is a valid thing and it's up to you to decide whether you are or not, not just some random person. Like, your friends and family are going, oh, actually, no, there's just something wrong with you.
Yeah, absolutely, I agree completely.
The question is, why do people react that way?
I
wasn't just offering this general topic, because I mean, that's what I've tried to look at.
Because it's not, like, people don't know what it is, and people, so they're like, oh, well, I've never heard of it, so it can't exist. Like,
I guess maybe because if people enjoy sex and they find that an enjoyable part of their life, they might find it quite sad that somebody doesn't want to have that or thinks there's nothing in it, and they might say, well, actually, you're missing out. Maybe you should, you know, do this.
That's very much true. I've certainly heard people say that. They're like, well, they don't like that. Well, they're just sad. Or, and I mean, but a good thing to tell them if they're straight as well. So say if you're gay, then a gay person enjoys, or a gay man, say, enjoys sex with other men, and that's a wonderful experience. Now, why don't you do that then?
Yeah.
I mean, then they start to realise that, well, just because somebody else finds something enjoyable doesn't mean they would find it enjoyable.
Yeah.
And this is another sort of reason that we owe a lot to the LGBT community, because it's analogies like that that actually, I think, are best at getting through to people about asexuality. If like asexuality was the only minority orientation, then we'd have a much, much more difficult time. But it's the fact that we can kind of use the analogy with gay people or bisexual people, and we kind of know that minority orientations already exist, that, well, I mean, so why shouldn't the orientation of asexuality exist? There's no reason for it not to.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, historically, I find it really interesting, because this whole idea of sexual freedom, I think the logical end result of this, if you take it all the way through, is that people should be free not to have sex if they don't want to.
Yeah.
And that's an aspect of sexual freedom that, until the emergence of the asexual community in the last decade, just
hasn't really been focused on.
That's
the kind of thing that I find really awful as well. So isn't it like, surely it's a human right not to have sex if you don't want to?
Mm-hmm. And of course it's not helped to...
It's in like one specific situation or like your whole life, sorry, COVID.
I mean, yeah, and of course, the other problem is that naively that kind of attitude is kind of associated with the exact opposite of the spectrum, like the sort of puritanical spectrum, and of, you know, people who try to encourage others in various situations not to have sex, like no sex before marriage, or if you're gay then you shouldn't have sex, and all that. And so this unfortunate association between asexuality and this kind of attitude, of course, we absolutely want to get away from. And I think that attitude has actually held back asexual visibility quite a lot, especially in the sort of more tolerant communities.
So how do you distinguish between romantic attraction and like a really strong friendship? Because I've always found it very difficult.
That is an extremely good question, and I'm afraid my honest answer is I don't know. And I say that it's a question that I never actually had a good answer from people who are sexual. Of course, it's not the case that, as I said before, it's not the case that, you know, sex is what makes a friendship a relationship. That's obviously false. You can be having sex and not be in a relationship, and there are people who, for whatever reason, can't have sex and would say they are in a relationship, even if they're not actually asexual. I would say that people kind of know if they're in a romantic relationship. That's all I can say. It's all about self-identification again. I don't have a good definition, but people know when they're in love with somebody, or people know when there's a difference between a friendship and a relationship. But I don't think there is any hard and fast boundary. At least I've tried to find one, and I don't know of any answer.
Because I think there are boundaries in our experience. It's just finding the words to put that experience, to articulate that experience, which is more difficult.
And it can be different for different people.
Absolutely.
Like, things that people, some people might think, well, that's something that I would do with my best friend. Other people might think, well, I wouldn't do that with my best friend. It would only be with someone who I was in a romantic relationship with.
Because this is incredible. Sorry.
Yeah. It's a boundary which is like quite unique to each person.
Absolutely. I mean, some people will say that, you know, I have an emotional closeness with my partner I could never share with anybody. But then, of course, that's not universal, because some people will have an actual platonic friendship with somebody who they'd actually describe in exactly those terms. and some people might define it in terms of exclusivity, but then on the other hand, that isn't universal either, because then you have polyromantic people, but polyamorous, or people who are in open relationships, and again, this sort of trying to sort of define it, pin it down by a few definite criteria, just in my experience, it just doesn't work.
It's the emotional and sexual experience of relationships with other human beings are incredibly, incredibly rich, and dependent on the situation and dependent on the people involved. And the language, the vocabulary we have for them is very limited. I think in a certain way we're all constantly trying to fit, you know, round things into square boxes. And we run up against the limits of language and the languages we have.
Anybody got anything else to add? Okay, well, I mean, I'd like to thank you all. I mean, I think that was it was a very interesting discussion we had at the end. Do you have anything to add, just to finish off with?
No, thank you very much.
Cool.
Cheers.
Thank you very much.